Michigan office manager risked his career to expose a doctor who gave chemotherapy to patients who did not have cancer.
Dr. Fareed Fata took an oath to do no harm. He did the exact opposite, harming patients by the hundreds in order to build the healthcare system out of millions.
Welcome back to another episode of Seven Deadly Sinners, coming to you live from Oregon, my home state, home of many Bigfoot sightings, which I can't stop trying to witness myself. Yeah, I even walked like 17,000 steps yesterday with my dog wrapped on a leash around my waist while Greg was at a bachelor party here trying to find Bigfoot. I did not find him or any sign of him, but I did get a hell of a workout because for a one-year-old dog, Blue is the strongest dog I've ever walked. I'm not joking. A rope wrapped around my waist and I almost fell over probably 30 times. But he's the cutest dog ever, so who cares? Anyway, let's jump into the case because it's a wild one. One you may have heard of before, but one that should continue to be told. This is Greed, the real Dr. Evil. Imagine sitting in the doctor's office and hearing the words every patient dreads. You have cancer. Unfortunately, it's an experience I'm sure many of you are all too familiar with. Whether walking through it yourself or with a loved one, the unknowns, the questions, the treatment options, the anxiety of things to come, the what ifs, the I'm so thankful I found this doctor feelings. For those of you who have gone through this firsthand, I commend you. You are strong. You are a warrior. And for those of you who have experienced it through the eyes of a loved one, I'm right there with you. But I have cried on almost every episode recently, so we are not doing that today. But yeah, my dad's had cancer for like 25 years, and he's fine, though. He just gets chemo twice a year. He always says to me, you can't kill me, I'm too mean. And that's true. So it's fine. Let's just make jokes about it. Anywho, so you'll understand why when I came across this next case, it literally felt like a punch to the gut. Because this doctor is a monster. A real-life Dr. Evil. And perhaps what's even crazier is that this doctor might still be deceiving patients, if not for the conscience of a brave office manager who risked his career to expose a doctor who gave chemotherapy and other treatments to patients who did not have cancer. Yes, you heard me correctly. This guy's a scumbag. It would later become clear that Dr. Fareed Fata gave unnecessary treatments to 553 patients at his Detroit area cancer centers, patients he had diagnosed with multiple types of cancer that they never even had. We're talking at least 9,000 unnecessary infusions or injections, including chemotherapy, to patients that didn't need it. In essence, he poisoned them. He burned their insides, caused lifelong impacts, ended lives unnecessarily, tormented families, all to line his pockets with $17 million he earned from this fraud. This is truly the epitome of evil. So what deadly sin could make a person do something so heinous? Well, greed, of course. Dr. Fata's educational background is nothing to scoff at either. He was born in the country of Lebanon in 1965 to a Catholic family. He obtained a medical degree in his home country in 1992 before emigrating to the United States to begin what would look like a successful career to an outsider. He served his residency at Maimonides Medical Center in Brooklyn from 1993 to 1996 before serving as a fellow in the very prestigious Hematology Oncology Department at Memorial Sloan Kettering Cancer Center in Manhattan through 1999. From 2000 to 2003, Dr. Fata was also the attending physician at Geisinger Medical Center in Danville, Pennsylvania. But Dr. Fata had his sights set on bigger things. He decided to forge ahead with his own practice in 2003, opening Michigan Hematology Oncology in the wealthy Detroit suburb of Rochester Hills, Michigan. After that successful first attempt at striking out on his own, the practice grew to a whopping 7 locations throughout the Detroit metro area. It became the state's largest private cancer practice. He was reputable, and he was trusted, specializing in treating blood cancer. Who would question him with that resume and high level of success? He became a naturalized U.S. citizen in 2009 and opened his own laboratory, pharmacy, way to really just corner the market, pharmacy and radiation treatment facility. I'm not sure if those are normal practices in the profession or if those were potential red flags. Like, are you an expert at all of the things? It seems a little bit fishy to me. Regardless, people flocked to the medicine man in droves. At one point, the practice was treating 17,000 patients throughout his bevy of clinics. With the help of his wife, Samar, who helped run the business end of things as chief executive officer and chief financial officer, the practice flourished. Again, a lot of big level tasks for one person. You're an expert in being the CEO and the CFO. Just saying. Dr. Fatta's fame and reputation continued to grow, and he was considered one of the best cancer specialists in the area, if not the best. Well known for his aggressive approach to treatment that he called the, quote, European protocol. Sir, this isn't like Gucci fashion where people just buy into it because it's like, oh my God, Europeans know so much more about fashion, or maybe cheese. It's people's lives. I mean, he went so far as to forge a medical paper that supposedly proved the value of one of the medications he was overprescribing many of his patients. If patients wanted to seek a second opinion or do some research on their own, he would often take on a condescending tone, asking them where they went to medical school, while at the same time keeping a tight leash on their personal files so they couldn't effectively seek a second opinion. How he didn't get slapped across the face for that, I don't know. Where did you go to medical school, ma'am? I'm telling you, you're possibly going to die, but you have questions? Well, you shouldn't, because you're just a teacher at an elementary school. That's what I seriously feel like he was inferring there. And for years, he got away with this type of behavior. The over-prescribing of treatments to the tune of nearly $35 million in insurance billings to patients and Medicare. The hoodwinking of patients into the infusion chair by telling them they had to receive, quote, maintenance chemo for cancers already in remission. Telling others they needed chemotherapy when really they only needed observation. And if it couldn't get worse, insisting patients that he knew to be legitimately terminally ill continue to receive treatments that he knew were pointless. Even, and it sickens me to say this, pulling patients out of hospice to put them back on chemo at the end of their lives. Rail thin, practically lifeless bodies being poisoned in their final days. All so he could make another buck. I can't even fathom what the families went through. Dr. Fatta also demanded if his patients were hospitalized that the physicians tending to them keep him in the loop at all times while sharing little with the doctors about his own treatments. This sounds so culty. You don't know what I'm doing, but I need to know what you're doing. Just take a minute to think about this. Imagine as a cancer patient, how much trust you put into your oncologist. I mean, my dad goes golfing with his. They're buddies. They've known each other for 25 years. I trust him, but this story has scared me. But you assume they have your best interests in mind. They become your champion. You give them control over your treatments with the hope that it will heal you. Your family develops a relationship with this person. They put their faith and trust in the doctor as well. It's such a godlike relationship that goes through so many ups and downs. The, how could this be happening to me? To the, I'm so thankful this doctor caught this. To, I'm so thankful I found this doctor. It's a wild, wild ride and a wild relationship. One that Dr. Fatta took so much advantage of. Barbara McQuaid, U.S. Attorney for Eastern District of Michigan, described this perfectly in a press conference. Here's a clip.
All of us can understand the kind of trust that we have to put into a doctor to help us through the most difficult times of our lives. And so it's difficult to imagine the kind of betrayal that someone must feel when they find out that the doctor not only lied to them about the kind of treatment that was necessary, but lied to them about whether they ever had cancer at all.
It is reported through various sources like Newsweek and other major organizations that seemingly through every stage of cancer, including those with no cancer at all, Dr. Fata promised patients that remission was 70% likely. There was only one caveat. They had to remain completely loyal to him. He conned many patients into receiving additional doses of the immunosuppressive drug Rituxan. This is really scary. I trust my dad's doctor, but this is really scary. That's what my dad gets, that someone would do this to someone. Hey. Anyway, this was all part of his European protocol. Even after they successfully completed treatment, he was doing this for lymphoma. Whether they were aware they were in remission or not, I'm not sure, but he was continuing to give them additional doses. Some patients were on the drug unnecessarily for 3 extra years. This left their immune systems completely wrecked. I can tell you from speaking with both Kate, research and writing assistant for the podcast, who has taken immunosuppressive drugs for her lupus, and from visually seeing my dad for 25 years, that it does wreck your body. Granted, it does make my dad feel better. It just takes a little bit. But he actually has cancer. So the people that didn't have it didn't need it. In addition, others have been overprescribed the bone cancer fighting drug Zometa, resulting in decaying jaws, lost teeth, and never-ending bouts of pain for a treatment they didn't need. U.S. Attorney Barbara McQuaid added this synopsis of Dr. Fata's actions at the press conference. Here's a clip.
But Dr. Fata gave poison to people who didn't even have cancer. And he gave poison to these people not to keep them alive, but to make money, because it was profitable for him to do that.
It's beyond my thinking. How can somebody do that knowingly that they're hurting somebody and abusing somebody and just continue doing it just for money?
This is pure evil greed at work, my friends. This is one of the worst things I've ever heard. The following is a clip, too, from ABC News chief health and medical editor giving his perspective on what such treatments can do to an individual and a shocking revelation from one of Dr. Fata's patients, Monica Flagg, who realized her outcome could have been so, so much worse.
These drugs are basically poisons, and you use them in someone who has cancer because they will kill the cancer cells. But when you do that, you know that there are going to be side effects, and often very, very severe side effects in those patients as part of that treatment.
One of his patients, 53-year-old Monica Flagg.
I was referred to Dr. Fata for hematology consultation. I was feeling fine. I continued to feel fine until I started some of my treatments with him. I did one chemo treatment. The others did so many that they're practically dead anyway.
In 2012, Dr. Fata told her she had cancer.
He said we caught it early and that I would be on a lifetime maintenance dose of chemotherapy. So it wasn't going to be a real aggressive treatment.
After breaking a leg, she was delivered life-changing news from another doctor in Fata's practice. She was perfectly healthy.
He read my chart. He looked at me very strangely. I'll never forget the look. He came back again the following day and said to me, I want you to know I work for Dr. Fata, and I want you to know you're 51, you're extremely active, you're a professional. You don't have cancer, and you need to not ever go back to Dr. Fata.
We will get more into Monica Flagg's story in a bit, but here are a few other family accounts worth mentioning. According to one family's impact statement as seen in court, oh yeah, we're going to get to that. Thank God he goes to court. Quote, a terminally ill woman spent the last few moments of her life angry with her family for questioning the wisdom of declaring bankruptcy in order to continue paying for Fata's care. She kept putting things off, thinking that she would have time when she got better, or was never able to accept that she was dying because Fata convinced her that she was not going to die. This is just so tragic because not only for the victim,
who paid the ultimate price with her life, but for the family to have been pushed aside in the patient's final days due to her anger. Here is truly another heartbreaking victim story as seen on the Today Show.
Today, National Investigative Correspondent Jeff Rossin's here with this story. Jeff, good morning.
Hey, Savannah, good morning. This is a popular doctor who has more than 1,000 patients, patients who trusted him, of course. And so these accusations are truly alarming. Anyone who's been through chemotherapy knows how rough it is. But prosecutors say this doctor was giving chemo to people who didn't need it. Some of them didn't even have cancer, all part of an alleged $35 million fraud. This is the man, Dr. Fareed Fattah, a trusted oncologist who prosecutors say preyed on patients to pad his pockets. The FBI hauling evidence from his offices last week in upscale Michigan neighborhoods. And the charges against Dr. Fattah are disturbing. Deliberate misdiagnosis of patients as having cancer, giving unnecessary chemotherapy, even to end-of-life patients who will not benefit.
If he did indeed commit these crimes, then a monster is a very good description.
Jeff Burrs fears his father, Milton, suffered under Dr. Fattah's care, prescribed chemotherapy for leukemia. But even as his health got worse, Jeff says Dr. Fattah wouldn't stop chemo and went to great lengths to administer it.
My dad would often arrive at Dr. Fattah's office, and one of the staff would come out and actually administer the therapy session in my father's car while he's sitting out in the parking garage.
Months later, Milton died. Now his son has reached out to prosecutors.
I hate to think that my father was either hurt or had his life shortened by this man if it wasn't necessary.
Honestly, there are so many victim stories out there on this case. And a more comprehensive version, which you should listen to, it's a Wondery podcast called Dr. Death, where they cover this over an entire season. But it was really hard to narrow down which ones that we wanted to talk about on this single episode. But they're all so heartbreaking. There are so many more victims than just who suffered physically. I mean, there's the family, the friends, the coworkers, anyone who cared about these people. They are all victims. So how do we regulate this type of care? How do we know that doctors are doing their absolute best for the patient in front of them and not focusing solely on their bottom line? Sadly, medical police don't exist. Sure, there's the Hippocratic Oath that the doctors, quote, first do no harm, but how does potential malpractice ever see the light of day? In this case, some of the nurses and doctors in Fattah's various practices began actively working around his methods. Some defied his orders and gave patients their full medical files. Others questioned strange policies of scheduling iron transfusions before any lab work, indicating they had done so. At least one doctor is said to have been reluctant to provide referrals to a hospice agency that had bribed Dr. Fattah for recommendations. Several others resigned to avoid working with him. And unfortunately, many also turned a blind eye. Here is an interview with a nurse who interviewed for a position in his office from ABC7 News. What she saw during that interview gave her enough pause to file a complaint on the doctor with the medical board.
Well, this oncology nurse is still very emotional and upset about this. She says that she went in for an interview and was disgusted by what she found inside. Angela Swantek is an oncology nurse. So upset, she came forward to 7 Action News about her experience with Dr. Fattah. She was up for a position, she says, in his office 3 years ago. Swantek decided to go to the office to see if she would like to work there. But what happened in a matter of an hour and a half left her sick to her stomach. According to Swantek, she couldn't believe how patients were being treated there and said there was also gross neglect.
Chemotherapy being infused at inappropriate times. So something that should go over 15 minutes, he ordered to be done in an hour or two. Things just being infused incorrectly. So as a nurse, I went home and I went online and I printed out the form, and I turned him in to the state medical board.
She complained to the state medical board, but she got a letter later saying there was no wrongdoing found, and quote, the public health code could not be established to support disciplinary proceedings. Swantech wonders what more she could have done.
Very upsetting as an oncology nurse, and all the patients that I've taken care of in the 23 years. And I was angry because I felt, what else could I have done? You know, I turned him into the medical board.
And Swantech says that she ended up taking a job at another doctor's office near Dr. Fata, and she says it was very hard for her to go to work every day. We will be
following. Others grew courageously suspicious. As reported by Laura Berman of the Detroit News, quote, one of these employees, Dr. So Mongley, eventually reached their breaking point in July 2013. For the previous 11 months, she had been working for Fata's practice, Michigan Hematology Oncology, and from the very beginning, their relationship had been rocky. Fata assigned Mongley to a location and hours that kept him far away from his own patients. After Mongley requested that a physician be present anytime a patient was undergoing chemotherapy. And his suspicions further developed after he caught Fata lying about his facility having already obtained certification from the Quality Oncology Practice Initiative, when it actually hadn't. His growing frustration with Fata led him to tender his resignation for that upcoming August, end quote. This was the doctor who told Monica Flagg, if you remember that from the previous clip, that she did not have cancer. While she was hospitalized for a broken leg, Dr. Mongley happened to be the physician on duty for Dr. Fata's rounds. And he was stunned at what he had seen and hadn't seen in Monica's file regarding her multiple myeloma diagnosis and necessary treatments. After this interaction, Dr. Mongley began to look at other patient files, and he was rightly outraged. His own father had died from cancer. This was personal. And it unnerved him that Fata's cancer of choice seemed to be myeloma, a cancer that required subjectivity of diagnosis. It wasn't an obvious tumor or lung cancer that he was diagnosing his patients with, something that would be visible to them on a screen. It was all an illusion, a smokescreen. Because in myeloma's early stages, it is merely signaled by very slight changes in blood chemistry. And Monica Flagg had initially been diagnosed with a type of myeloma and subjected to unorthodox and expensive treatment. She was subjected to 3 painful bone marrow biopsies and prescribed injections at $4,000 a pop. But she felt fine, so what do we suppose our dear doctor did then? Well, Dr. Fata changed her diagnosis to multiple myeloma, though she was very young to be diagnosed with this form of cancer, an often deadly cancer involving the plasma in the bone marrow. All the while, her sister had breast cancer, her brother had lung cancer. And I'll say it louder for the people in the back. Aside from her treatments, she felt fine. And Dr. Mongley is just a badass, in my opinion. He doesn't rest. He pored over Monica Flagg's charts, every test, every handwritten note. Nothing pointed to her having that kind of cancer that she had been diagnosed with. The diagnosis and treatment was all made up. Dr. Mongley alerted the practice manager about his concerns at the clinic, and this began the unraveling of Dr. Fata's empire. A concerned potential nurse, a worried doctor, and a brave office manager who risked his job to become a selfless whistleblower. Sometimes that is all it takes. Here is a jaw-dropping clip from CBS News, and thank goodness someone had the balls to step up to this evil man.
I couldn't believe what was in front of me. I couldn't believe what I was seeing.
George Karace took a new job in 2011.
I was an office manager for an oncology practice.
Dr. Fareed Fata had a rapidly expanding practice in suburban Detroit. But within 2 years, one of the other oncologists and 2 nurse practitioners announced they were leaving. Karace confronted that other oncologist.
Are you leaving? And he said, yes. And I said, can I ask you why?
What the doctor told George Karace about Dr. Fata was a bombshell.
Patients were given chemotherapy and other treatments when they didn't have cancer.
Robert Soboray was referred to Dr. Fata by his back surgeon.
I heard he was one of the best there is.
I am Dr. Farid Fata with Michigan Hematology Oncology.
Dr. Fata did a bone marrow biopsy.
2 weeks later, he turned around and said, you got multiple myeloma. It's a blood cancer, a bone-destroying disease.
He began monthly chemotherapy infusions.
I'd become weak, sick to my stomach, tired all the time. I couldn't walk anymore. The chemotherapy eventually destroyed all my teeth.
Soboray went to see a different oncologist. He was shaken by what he heard.
And he says, I've seen both biopsies. There's nothing says that you had cancer anywhere in there. I was shocked. It was worse than hearing that you have cancer.
I was determined to have this doctor stop harming people.
His head spinning, George contacted an attorney he knew who handled whistleblower cases. George believed he might have a strong one.
We've heard a lot of strange stories about fraud, but that one was beyond fraud. It was cruel, it was criminal, it was risking people with poison.
David Heron wasted no time. He called the Department of Justice.
Without a doubt, this is the fastest and most intense lawsuit I've ever handled in this area.
George Karace was willing to put everything on the line.
My job was at stake, my livelihood, even my own personal safety. I wasn't looking at the patients anymore as being treated. I looked at it as a burning building with people inside. I had to make it stop, and I had to make it stop quickly.
Health and Human Services, the IRS, and the FBI worked tirelessly once George came forward because patients' lives were at stake. 5 days after the whistle was blown, Dr. Fata was arrested on August 6, 2013, charged in a criminal complaint for his role in the healthcare fraud scheme. One of the allegations in the complaint alleged that, quote, Dr. Fata falsified and directed others to falsify documents to justify cancer treatments for billing purposes. MHO billed Medicare for approximately $35 million over a two-year period, approximately $25 million of which is attributed to Dr. Fata, end quote. And this is according to the website justice.gov. You'd think that perhaps patients and their families could breathe a sigh of relief, though, after the mad doctor's arrest. But it wasn't that simple. Dr. Fata had covered his tracks, mixing chemo drugs without a licensed pharmacist present. His offices had all the fancy equipment like PET scan machines, so patients never had to go elsewhere for tests. And he was able to charge Medicare at such a massive rate because he saw anywhere from 70 to 80 patients per day. Thus began the crazy process of determining which of the doctor's patients actually needed chemo and other potentially invasive treatments. Or not, as they were showing up for their appointments while the FBI was feverishly pulling files and the investigation was unfolding. Ultimately, it was determined that approximately 550 of Dr. Fata's patients were receiving unnecessary treatment. The loved ones and families of 550 individuals were left reeling. I mean, what is worse, being told you have cancer or sitting there in your needlessly broken body hearing that you never did? It's disgusting. After Dr. Fata's arrest, patient care remained top priority. A hotline was set up for patients to access their files and to allow families to begin the arduous process of getting their questions answered. The special agent in charge of the investigation said, quote, the conduct alleged in this complaint is serious, not only in terms of potential. We will aggressively investigate allegations of this nature in order to ensure the safety of Medicare patients and to protect vital taxpayer dollars, end quote. Adding that violating a patient's trust in this way was deplorable. Ultimately, Dr. Fata pleaded guilty in 2014 to 13 counts of healthcare fraud, one count of conspiracy to receive kickbacks, and two counts of money laundering. And here's a clip from ABC7 regarding his sentencing of 45 years in July of 2015. instead of the 175 years recommended by the prosecution.
Well, good afternoon. A dramatic morning in court. Fareed Fatah sentenced to 45 years in prison. Victims' families, victims themselves, their friends gasping at that. They wanted 175 years. I'm going to start by giving you a live picture here outside the courthouse. You can just see the media crush and some of those victims and their family members that have gathered out here to share their thoughts with us. The judge saying moments ago, this is a huge, horrific series of criminal acts that were committed by the defendant. Before his sentencing, Fatah stood up in front of the judge and sobbed uncontrollably at times. It was the first time he showed any emotion in court. He refused to face his victims or show emotion during their impact statements earlier this week, but somehow found the tears when it came to trying to save himself. Now, Fatah, you may recall, is accused of unnecessarily medicating more than 500 patients, some with chemo, patients who didn't even have cancer. His motive? They're now left with lasting health problems, those victims. His motive, money and greed, according to him and the judge. He would fraudulently bill insurers for those bogus treatments. Now, here's some of what Fatah said to the judge when pleading for a lesser sentence. I want to show you this. I stand before you so ashamed of my actions. I pray for repentance and the right of redemption. Last Tuesday, I could not look at my patients and their families. I was horribly ashamed of my conduct. I have violated the medical oath and caused anguish, hardship, and pain to my patients and their families. If we can come back here live, I want to bring in some of these folks that were listening to all of this. Your name, ma'am?
Cheryl Blades.
And tell me your story briefly.
My mom was diagnosed in 2011 with adenocarcinoma, and after his arrest and getting her records, we found out that she was grossly overdosed with Feraheme, which is one of the items that he pled guilty to.
And your reaction to the 45 years?
Not long enough. It's not long enough. He took many lives. 45 years is not long enough.
And when he got up there and gave his impact statement, he was crying. Did it mean anything to you?
It was more of hearing his voice for the first time was the hardest part of me, because I could hear him talking to my mother, because I went to every appointment. So I could hear him talking to her and promising her to save her.
And tell me about these blue ribbons. All of you guys have been banding together all week. You've been traveling by bus, coming in, holding hands, supporting each other. What does that mean?
We've become a family. The blue ribbon signifies our group for the patients and victims of Dr. Fatah's. We stand together as one. As we said before, we're an army of one, and we will continue fighting this to make sure that other doctors can't do this to other victims.
Dr. Fatah filed an appeal in 2016, focusing on how the judge calculated the sentencing guidelines. Shouldn't be happy he only got 45 years, not the full 175, but still probably life in prison, and whether it was proper to allow so many victims to speak in court. The appeals court voted in a 3-0 decision that the argument lacked merit and confirmed the 45-year sentence. He filed another appeal in 2019, arguing that he was misled by his attorneys about his likely sentence. Again, stop arguing. It's 45 years, not 175. If you were born in 1965, you're probably dying in there anyways, but kind of deserve it. In February of 2020, the request was tossed out, the judge stating that Fatah had pleaded guilty because he was guilty. These weren't Dr. Fatah's only attempts of getting out of that slammer. He's nothing if not persistent. In the early days of the COVID-19 pandemic, his lawyers wrote that Fatah suffers from several, quote, debilitating medical conditions, end quote. it's just hilarious because it's, you've already made up diseases, buddy. Let's not make up your own. I mean, maybe you have them, but it's just, or maybe you don't. Who knows? What do your files say? Or lack of files or deleted files? Anyways, they said he had type 2 diabetes, gastrointestinal bleeding, and early dementia, asking that he be considered for release from federal prison to stem the spread of the virus a mere 5 years into his 45-year term. In response, U.S. District Judge Paul Borman wrote that the former doctor did not deserve to be released during the pandemic. Quote, Fatah's underlying criminal conduct demonstrates a total lack of compassion for his many victims over the years. The judge then added that significantly reducing his sentence would unjustifiably mitigate the nature and circumstance of his horrific offenses committed on human victims, undermine respect for the law, not result in a just sentence, undermine the deterrence factor of his criminal conduct, and finally, given his prior misconduct, not protect the public from his potential for further criminal activity if released. End quote. I personally take that as a win. This episode could have been so much longer, guys, because there are so many interviews from so many affected families, but I did again want to shout out a fellow Wondery podcast for going super in-depth with this subject on the podcast Dr. Death. They took an amazing deep dive, so please give a listen to them. And thank you guys so much for listening. I love you. Bye.